And welcome back to the NAGB's Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Colson, I'm your host for this evening, and we're here in the studio with John Beadle, who has an upcoming show at Turn Gallery, which is a new gallery that opened on the west end of the island, which actually just came back from Art Basel Miami Beach, where we have, you know, I have to brag a little bit. We had an awesome week, and apparently people were coming and being like, everybody's talking about Turn Gallery. And we put the Bahamas on the map. Not just us, but other Bahamians were there. It was pretty amazing. So Jeffrey Maris was exhibiting at another art fair called Nada with a gallery from New York. Dominique Knowles was exhibiting with a gallery from America, I think Milwaukee. Arnold Kemp was exhibiting with a gallery from Chicago. They were at Nada. Giovanna Swaby was exhibiting with a gallery from New York called Claire Oliver Gallery at the fair we were at, which is untitled. And then Turn was exhibiting with five women artists from the Bahamas. And we had a great time. Then also Tavara Strawn, who is kind of like the rock star of the Bahamian art scene, was exhibiting at the main fair at Art Basel Miami Beach. The Prime Minister came and visited him. And I just have to say, Mr. Prime Minister, next time, come visit your other Bahamian people then. You know, because that picture of you shaking hands, we're all very proud for Tavares, but come and see the other. There are many, many Bahamians really knocking it out the park. And I've said before, and I'll say it again, things like the Venice Biennial and Art Basel Miami Beach, those are like the Olympics of the art world. And you got Bahamians out there getting gold, silver, bronze medals. And you know what? We're not getting that Junkanoo rush out. I was very bummed out when I got off the plane and there was not a Junkanoo rush out for me and my colleagues and my artists. Because, again, there's amazing things happening and the world is looking at the Bahamas and the greater Caribbean because we always try to uplift all of our sisters and cousins in the region. But, you know, I'm all about the Bahamas. So there we go. Right, John, I'm the most unlikely Bahama cheerleader ever, right? And what was funny, when I worked at Volta, John Murray used to work for me. And so I was like, John, we got to like stop this. Everyone's going to think the Bahamas is just full of like white red-haired people because we were so loud and we were so proud. And we just happened to be like two white Bahamians with red hair. So, yeah, anyway, I had a Bahamian flag dress on opening day.
Yeah.
You best believe.
Yeah. Nice.
I saw it at Home Fabrics, the fabric. And it was like, it's kind of like a, wasn't the flag exactly, it was kind of like an abstract image of the flag. So it had like yellow and turquoise stripes, and then it had kind of like black triangles just sort of floating. So people that didn't know our flag didn't get it right away, but like anyone that did was just like, oh my gosh. You've exhibited around the world. You've exhibited in Sao Paulo, you've exhibited at Martinique. I know that Tavara sometimes doesn't like kind of being or you know, doesn't want to be pigeonholed as a Bahamian artist or Caribbean artist, and you know, he just wants to be an artist. Which I totally get. How do you feel like if you're positioned internationally? Do you think it's important to like establish your Jamaican Bahamianness? Do you think it's irrelevant? Do you think it's necessary? You know, so I sort of see it as a leverage. I'm like, get your foot in the door, and the exoticism gets you in the door, and then we can like forget talking about it. But how do you feel about it if people?
I think I feel the same. Do I? No, I always want to people know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if the work reflects that, I mean, the work should have some kind of dialect,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it reflects where you come from.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think so, too. I mean, yeah, it's just funny because, you know, again, like people that I think people do recognize their nationality from other countries. They're like an American artist, a German artist. But what doesn't happen so much, what I get a lot, and when I was still director of NAGB and I travel, people would say, What is Bahamian art? What's it like? And I don't know that people would ever say, what's German art? Or what's Swiss art? Because they accept the fact that it can be anything. It can be abstract, it can be figurative, it can be painting. But I feel like when you're still an emerging, what's considered an emerging, and that's not to say that we are emerging, but just to the world we sort of are, they always sort of want to know, well, what's it like?
Yeah, because Caribbean art has been pigeonholed and Caribbean art has been defined by other people. So they still want to hear that definition or recognize that definition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the Caribbean artists who making work and making powerful work, just making artwork.
Yeah.
You know, and want to be looked at as just people making artwork as opposed to making a particular kind of artwork.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a dialect in some of them because you recognize this idiosyncrasy that belongs to the work that came from the environment there.
I think when I get cornered in a way for an answer, I say that very often like materiality is something I would say very often pops up. You know, a really different way of looking at material and of not just painting or not just drawing. I feel like every Bahamian artist I know is like a multidisciplinary artist.
Man, you got to be, because it's the environment you live in, and it comes from growing up in an environment where you have to
tinker.
You got to fix something, you know. And if you don't have paint, you want to. I mean, it's a dialect.
Mm-hmm.
We corrupt everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the best way to corrupt it? Add something else, and we don't even know we're doing it sometimes. So you have this. I don't even know. I want to say gumbo, but that's not what I want to say because that's not belong to this environment.
Kong salad.
You have something like that and you realize there are different ways to make it. I mean, I had Kong salad without Kong in it. So how do you call it?
I had a Kong salad made with coconut instead. It was a vegan one. It was actually good. And you know what? The weird thing is the first two bites, I wasn't even sure because there was so much. You know, the first bite was like, wait a second, that's kind of crunchy. And then I took another bite because it didn't taste really coconutty.
I need to try that.
And it wasn't like a really... hard coconut, like it was still a little bit soft, you know, so it had the sort of texture of a conch.
Yeah.
And it took me a couple mouthfuls, and because it had all the spice, it had all the, you know, and it was made for like a vegan palate, and I was just like, I was really surprised. But yeah, same thing. I mean, I heard they put mayonnaise in some places, and I was like, what?
Yeah, keep that for a little bit. Yeah, so, you know, you recognize the environment it comes from because you're from the environment. You go to Jamaica and you see some artists, oh, that's looking interesting, that could be from but the Caribbean, but who?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or see a Trinidadian artist, or that could be from the Caribbean, but who with Caribbean Island?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some similarities. But for me, I would like to keep my Caribbeanness, whatever that is. But I know, I guess the farther field I go, I have to be always come back and refuel.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, in a way, that's what Turn Gallery is about, is to because it is important to come back and refuel, but maybe you don't have to leave. So, you know, the idea is that people will be able to like stay in the Bahamas or stay in the region and still reach that global network, because traditionally so many artists have had to leave.
Yeah.
Whether it's LeVar Monroe or Tavares Strawn or Jean Antoni, just from our area, and then of course we can get into Jamaicans, Ebony Patterson, whatever, that to sort of, you know, be accepted somehow, you have to like be present in this other network. And we hope to be able to make that happen, because I think it is important to like draw on the fuel from that created you, right? So of course that inevitably leads to the Junkanoo Shack, John Beadle.
Yeah, sometimes, but not always. I got what you just did.
You got what I just did.
Yeah, I was falling out of it.
You can go down the other trajectory. That's fine.
Let's keep on going. I really forget. Once I recognized what's going on, I forgot what I was going to say.
No, just because, again, you know, I mean, we talk about it every time you're on the air, but as you say, maybe you'll have a different answer. You know, you are also a really respected, long-time creator in the Junkanoo community. And a lot of your work that goes into then the sort of institutional kind of quote-unquote art world, the fine artwork, and audience, you can't see me, I'm air quoting, because I do think it's all art. And I think what's really interesting and happening in the art world now is that you see all these things that were considered craft before, like tapestries and ceramics, and it's all becoming much more kind of normal to see again the vocabularies or materials that before were kind of considered lesser than or whatever. And so we have this cardboard. How much do you feel like you're actually like taking off one hat and putting on another, or are you always wearing them both? Is it just one? Is it just like, I mean, I guess it's like asking me,
I think I try to make all one, but I also recognize that sometimes I have to really think about what I'm doing. It's not right now, it's not seamless.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, I wanted my practice to feel like it's seamless, and I think I'm still working on it. And that's why I borrow from different spheres.
It's interesting. As I was just thinking about it, it came to my head in terms of, like, let's say, identity. Because, you know, a lot of people are dual nationals. And there's a lot of kind of issues around that. Like, you know, we're going to lose our culture. But you don't. Because as someone who's binational myself, and my kids are actually trinational, you feel authentically part of one space and part of another space, but you do kind of code switch a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. So when you go to if I go to the UK, I'll start talking more British. And if I'm here, you know, if I'm at the Montague Fish Market, I'll try to speak in my Bahamian Creole as best I can. You know, because, you know, and obviously when I'm here, I eat certain foods that I don't eat when I'm, you know, things. So, and I don't feel like either one of those is compromised necessarily. And I think lots of people, let's say Haitian Bahamians, do feel the same way, you know, that they can be like fully 100% Haitian and fully 100% Bahamian. So it's not actually what I learned just last week. I was talking to another kind of like multinational, and they said, you know, we have to stop saying we're half and half. We're not. We're both. Of course, you do kind of ebb and flow depending on where you are, who you're talking to. Yep. So you're always kind of both these things, but you're never fully one. So is it kind of like that, being a junkaneur and a painter, or, you know, that it's all there and you're drawing on these different experiences, but sometimes you're like code switching in a way, like you get to the shack and you're a bit of a different person than when you're at the NAGB.
Yeah, because, I mean, not you kind of said it in a kind of strange way. If I'm thinking about working, doing the work, as mm-hmm. opposed to even when I hang out with the people, mm-hmm. same thing, I guess, because it makes a difference to me who I'm speaking
mm-hmm.
to.
Mm-hmm.
The language may change because, yeah, speaking to art crowd, and I'm too lazy to find a language that is more universal. So mm-hmm. I use artists as opposed to mm-hmm. tinkerer, mm-hmm. that kind of way. But when it comes to the material, no. To some extent, yes, to some extent. Because we're working in a group of people and we make the thing and pass it on to someone else, then the person has to be familiar with the process.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't just go to my space and grab any material and start working on it and expect to pass it on to someone else who has to work on this thing mm-hmm. with the kind of speed that they have to work on.
Mm-hmm.
If I guess it could happen if the person's already familiar with the material, but if mm-hmm. the person isn't familiar, so I can't just decide I want to build a head and start using some material that is exotic to people who are going to pass it on to.
Mm-hmm.
So I always got to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, working as a team, and it's the team member. Mm-hmm. Are the team members familiar with the material, how to use the particular type of material?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
But do you feel like you're still using all the same knowledge bases, if you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like if you're carving
a
styrofoam head, or you're carving a mahogany thing, and is there... Do you have to like get out of a certain headspace into another headspace?
Yeah. I have to get out thinking the thing is mine mm-hmm. and say this is ours.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the creative process, even the creative thinking decisions we make, I want to say, you know, some of you shouldn't be worried about the competition. Let's worry about getting this thing, making the best thing possible. But some of the people worry about the competition, and if they say, like, yeah, let's do it this way because it may be good for the competition, and I got to, you know. It may hurt my feelings, but I got to go along.
Got to go with the flow.
Yeah.
How hard is that as an artist?
It's difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really difficult because you say, my mind is looking at trying to make the best object possible. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
I trust that if I make the best object possible, there's a great chance that it would win. And if I make a different kind of imagery, then there's a best chance that it may win if the judges know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a whole other show.
Yeah. And that's why I say it like that.
Yeah.
You know? So as an artist, I'm trusting that, yeah, I'm doing this thing. I want to make the best I possibly can do and forget about the competition.
I think that, from my perspective, I think that's great advice because it's kind of like I tell my kids about, or anyone, I'm like, don't think about the money you want to make. Think about what you want to do in your life, because if you do the thing you love, you'll end up making the money.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think.
But I acknowledge that that's also a point of privilege, right? To be able to say, like, yeah, don't worry, but you know that some people need to focus on that other thing, maybe.
Yeah, let those some people do that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's not my focus. You know, I wanna have fun first, and I wish I could sell my having fun. You know, that's ideal for me. And so far, I've been having a lot of fun. I've been trying to sell, been mm-hmm. selling some of my having fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so with the junk, you know, yeah, there's some compromises to be made
mm-hmm.
because I'm working in community. In my space, I am, there are compromises being made too because, number one, you know, always compromise to be made, man. You know, I don't have the materials I need at a particular time. I'm trying to sprint to get this object out because mm-hmm. the deadline is something I impose, a deadline is the exhibition impose, a deadline is the client impose, or just get, I want to get this out before I get tired.
Mm hmm.
So whatever is there I use, I may say, you know, someday I want to use a different material. My pocket print probably cannot bear that different material that I'm mm-hmm. thinking. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, okay, what I have at hand.
Mm-hmm.
So there are always compromises to be made. Sometimes you're uncomfortable with it. Sometimes you rationalize it. And sometimes you just, okay, I got to do this because
I... Does it ever work out actually better than you thought
it
might?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
I was asked to do something in a project I was working on, and I was like resistant. I was like on the edge. How dare you? And I just been thinking, I'm not going to tell it to the client.
Yeah.
How dare you ask me to do something like that? It's not what I want to do. I'm not working in that space right now. And so I said, start to think about what I was doing. I said, you know something? That kind of makes sense, but let me look at it. I made the adjustment. I said, whoa, this looks good.
Yeah, I've always thought it must be very hard to be a creative in a job where there's a client, like an architect. I think architects have a rough time because the client is like, no, I want it like this. And they maybe have the vision. You know, when you when you have like a vision, or even being a graphic designer for like an ad agency, you know, and you're like, it must be very hard.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that strips you of being the creative to some extent. You got to be creative in a
within a kind of framework or parameter.
And the confines may be too close for your sensibility, or it may be just right, or just maybe, you know, let me forget interior design or graphic design. Let me go make some Kong salad.
But not with mayonnaise. So we've only got 3 minutes left. So would you say that this show, The Splinters and Shards, which is upcoming, where there are these like standing objects, I guess in fancy art history talk, you'd call them stela, which are like a standing kind of like marker, and then these large circular works all made out of wood and some with metal. Would you say that's like absolutely 100% John Beadle? Because that was all in your studio and just you?
Yeah,
or how much compromise was there?
Nothing, you know, but how much? I don't know, because I have this thing about the reason why I made the second one is because the first one didn't satisfy me. The reason why I made the third one, because those two didn't satisfy me. The reason why I made the 10th one was those nine.
Okay, but we're not going to tell the people that buy them which ones he didn't like, okay? So that's a trade secret.
It's not that I liked them or not.
Yeah.
There was something absent that I was going
that
for
you were still
that I just
trying
couldn't
to,
get
yeah,
to.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Is that what drives you as an artist?
Yeah.
Are you ever going to be satisfied?
No. And that's a good thing.
Listen, of course. It is a good thing, because otherwise you'd stop, right?
Yeah. And I tell you, I mean, we started this conversation, you asked me why, and I say get bored.
Yeah.
And I do get bored easily.
Mm-hmm.
I think just being, doing this repetition, and as soon as I feel this repetition, I say, let me start something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy that I have the facility to do different things and the mindset to use different things that I could just jump to next creative process.
Mm-hmm. Perfect place to stop. So thank you so much, John Beadle, for being here this evening. Thank you for being the amazing tinkerer that you are. You know, I've always been like a massive fan of your work, and I just find it, you know, my husband and I always talk about what makes great artwork, and, you know, it's an ongoing situation that will never end. But one of the things is imitatio versus inventio, imitation versus invention. And your art constantly surprises me and is always like inventing something, you know, new but not new. And that's what's so great about it. It's like there's so much you recognize but going in a new direction. So
I get this thing about if we ever are presented with something that is totally different, it becomes invisible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it has to be something that you recognize, so you grasp, you hold on to that, and then something's different about what you recognize.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
So, thank you. It's a beautiful, beautiful show. And I'm not just saying that because it's at the gallery that I currently work at. I've been a fan of John Beadle for a long, long time. So I would encourage people to come out. The gallery is not just there to sell art. It's also there for people to just come and engage with art, just like any art gallery. You know, we're always happy to see anyone come in just to look around, answer questions, and just sit in the space and commune with the work. So please come out. Come out on Saturday if you can. Saturday 10 to 6, or really any other time. The gallery's open Tuesday to Saturday, 10 to 6 every day. And it's free to get in, by the way. People often think that maybe openings are paid because there's normally a bit of drink there and a bit of food. It's not. It's an open invitation. Please do not wait for that invitation to come through your door. You're not going to get it. I'm just giving it to you right now. So Turn Gallery on the hill. It's called Mahogany Hill, the hill that goes up to Albany from the Life for Key roundabout on the Island House property. And again, don't forget to also check out your national institution, the NAGB, which is still there on West Hill Street and is still free every single day for anyone living in the country to go, irrespective of your nationality. So Bahamians are free to go. Any other nationalities living here are free to go. And it's an awesome space. So please go visit. Also open Tuesday through Sunday, 10 to 6, Tuesdays 12 to 6. and just engage in your art community, because it's an awesome space full of, I think, pretty amazing people. So thank you for listening to The Blank Canvas. Thank you, John Beadle, for being with us this evening.
No problem at all.
Yeah, my pleasure. You've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great night.